Goshen. And first of all, I'd like to thank this commission for responding to my letter and memo that I sent last month for a tabling of this until we had a chance to do some research and give you a much better story of that particular block and house at today's meeting. In that regard, Irvin Beck and Rebecca Akins, Irvin's on our board and Rebecca's a volunteer at the Historical Society, have prepared a fairly comprehensive review of the nature of the building and of the history around the building and also of the families that have lived there and it's the way it fit into a single-family residence along 3rd Street from the time it was built. So I'd like to defer some of my time to those two individuals to allow them plenty of time, and I would ask that they be heard next.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you, Ron.
I think Rebecca has more to say than I do.
We need your name and city of residence.
My name is Irvin Beck. I live at 1402 No. 1 Pembroke Circle. I'm on the board of directors of the Historical Society. For 1 year, I was chair of the committee that drew up guidelines for historic preservation of the downtown area. I'm author of this directory to historic architecture in the historic district. And for what it's worth, next Thursday, I'll be leading a walking tour of the downtown historic district, and you're welcome to attend if you sign up. I'd first of all like to commend the commission for what it has done already in terms of historic preservation. The preservation and adaptive use of the Hawks Building is really nothing short of amazing. Thank you for making that possible. And also, the Italianate building that I think was a candidate for demolition and is now the office building called 313 on 3rd. Has been a welcome adaptation and preservation. I think the Hawks Building looks better because that building is standing along the road, and you see the Hawks Building behind it as you drive past. I hope you regard this house at 401 South 3rd Street in that same way, the success story of the 313 on 3rd. I think it can have similar good results. The building has architectural integrity from a historic point of view. In its original form, it was a Gothic Revival design, which is older than the Italianate building that you have preserved. True, it has lost some of those features. It's lost the looping decorations on the gable. It's lost its green shutters. And it's lost its entrance on 3rd Street, which was probably a roof that paralleled the steep gable roof, which is its distinguishing characteristic right now, a steep gable roof. It had an Italianate bay window added to it and an Italianate lean-to area and a craftsman porch, which is now the main entrance. To see one surviving Gothic Revival house, you go to page 35 of this directory, the one with the looping decorations on the roofline, and also 1115 South Main, which is almost a perfectly preserved version of this design. There are two more going south on 3rd Street, may have been built at the same time. Number 622 and number 706, they have lost those features too, but they can be easily added again. My thinking is that the city, needs to foreground the historic along that slice of the road as you look back into the new development of the townhouses and the pavilion that is going to go up there. This house offers the opportunity to continue to do that. If you think about it, at the north end of this development is the Crowder Law Office, an Italian design in very good condition. Then there's this big space where some modern apartment house is going to go in doesn't look very compatible with the historical nature that we're hoping for. Then the Miller Poultry, which is not old, but it is compatible because it uses historic materials and has echoes of classical design. And then there would be 401 South 3rd, which is in a very visible position as you go around that corner on 3rd Street down to 15. So I'm saying again that these buildings give a nice historic foreground to the more contemporary developments that will be taking place behind them. And I think it will help establish and preserve what we want. Two words of wisdom before I sit down. Some people say that in the absence of a commission that is concerned with historic preservation, the motto of Goshen should be, demolish no more 19th century brick buildings. After all, this house that we're talking about today is 160 years old. What do we gain by demolishing a house like that? That's number one. And number two, listen to the young people of Goshen. They love the Hawks Building. They love the historic stores downtown, Electric Brew and all the others, and the Goshen Brewing Company. They flock to these places. Yesterday at our meeting, over half of the people there were young people. I'm 82 years old, and they were half my age or younger and very well informed and very committed, interested in having this house and others like it preserved for the good of Goshen. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Rebecca Akins. I live at 212 East Jefferson Street. So I'm your neighbor. I'm a volunteer at the Historical Society. I do a lot of research on old houses. And I have a long history here for you, which is shortened version, actually. I won't go through the whole thing. Some of this you already know, that the house was built around 1861. There was a cooperage at the back of the property, attached actually to the front house, where the current blue brick house is now. This was converted into Christian Engel's cooperage or house in 1891. The house was built before the canal was put in. He had his small cooperage there on that property. He moved it south for a short period of time, and then he moved it across Madison Street. And later on, Hawks actually took over running his cooperage, and he sold that property to the Hawks, who eventually it was raised sometime after 1926. I think one of the things that's most interesting about this property is that from the time it was built in 1861, it stayed in the same family until 1992. The houses have been referred to as separate properties, separate residences, because that's how they've been used now. That didn't happen until the property was sold in 1943. Prior to that, it had been used by the Engel family off and on for their family would use the back portion, and then sometimes they would rent it out as needed. The initial family, Christian and Anna Engel, one of their daughters, after marrying and having three children, died of childbed fever, and her three children actually came to live at that house. Those three children were Helen, Thelma, and Ray Messick, who later was mayor of Goshen and sold his property for the industrial development and, you know, contributed quite a bit to Goshen. I'm defending this as a single property because when I was researching it, it was too challenging to try to determine, oh, their family's here in the back part at this time, and then they might have rented it out at various times. The way that the Sanborn maps, which are attached to it, show things, sometimes that's listed as a separate address, 204 West Madison. Sometimes it doesn't exist at all. I believe that this is largely because of whether it was Messick children or other parts of their family that were moving in and out. It was considered a single residence at that time. The development of the canal, I think that it's interesting that we have this early industry that later, you know, was moved into what became the Hawks. It's part of the Hawks' history, and it's the only remaining part of that early history that we have. Now his cooperage that was across Madison is a parking lot with the Hawks situated right next to it. So this house, which the architecture of it to me is one of, if the house isn't there, we can't ever, the house is what creates the question of the history. It makes you inquire further. And I think that that's important to have that landmark there to get people thinking about what the history might have been. Once it's gone, you know, there won't be any of this opportunity for us to continue looking into history. So I personally would really be disappointed to see it go. I think that it's an important part of the Mulleries history and part of the Hawks history. And it was in the same family for over 130 years. And they felt that it was worth keeping. So up until 1992, which really wasn't all that long ago, you know, it was home to a large family, and they contributed a lot to Goshen's history, and you'll be able to read more of that in here. And if you have any other questions about it, I have a lot more research on this that I can get to you.
Mr. President, I do have a question.
Yes, sir.
And first of all, kudos for your outstanding research and your passion. But I'd like to ask you this, if I can. Is there a difference between a building with a history and a historic building?
Yes, I think specifically in terms of the architecture of this particular house, there aren't very many.
But how much of the original architecture is intact?
Most of it. If you go inside.
I have been.
Okay,
inside.
Yeah. It has a beautiful entryway. It has really lovely woodwork. Hardware throughout the house is original to the house. What it's missing is a little something over the front door and some gingerbread up at the top. That's what's missing.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay. Who else would like to speak on the merits of saving this house?
Adam Sharp, Goshen. Each and every one of the members of the commission, I note, is a business person or entrepreneur or both, which means at some point you recognized an opportunity that someone else didn't. So there was somebody who recognized that opportunity, and then there was someone else who didn't recognize that particular opportunity or follow up on it. It's not necessarily your job as commissioners to identify and make good on every single opportunity yourselves, to open up the broadest set of possibilities for other folks to be able to do that. And there are folks who see opportunities here. I've been to a very tiny fraction of the Redevelopment Commission meetings over the last 20 years, and in that tiny fraction of meetings, I've heard members suggest or advocate the demolition of what are now Goshen Brewing Company, Crowder Law Office, the Hawks Building, the Italianate Office Building on 3rd Street, the Electric Brew, Ignition Music Garage, the Water and Sewer Office. I think with that track record, and that those were suggested and advocated and considered for demolition, and look at what they are today, because someone with energy and initiative and capital saw that opportunity, I would plead you to err on the side of allowing that this might be an opportunity that someone could recognize, even if it doesn't look beautiful right now, which it needs some TLC. That's, no one's arguing about that. So I hope that you'll go with the mayor's urging and pause here. I don't believe that, choosing not to demolish it right at this moment doesn't mean that you can never demolish it. It doesn't limit your scope of options for the future development or next use to keep it for right now, which was, I understand your interest in keeping a number of the houses on 3rd Street and properties over time was to keep your options open. Not demolishing this house right now keeps your options open and keeps the options open for folks in the community to be able to step up and act on an opportunity, which is this quite lovely home or set of homes.
Thank you.
I'm Dave Pottinger, 107 Gregory. I hate to be here. Everybody knows us. They know me.
You're here often enough.
I may repeat what's been
you
said.
You must like it.
I thought it might be interesting just to share some actual facts with you about this sort of process. I think there's a structural problem that goes on in most cities, and we certainly have it here. And there's a way to solve it, but we need to do that through getting actual facts of what the decisions have been made and how we dealt with that and so on. And I just want to say this. I want to pick out three structures. One was one that Adam just mentioned, which is the half block in Washington. When one of the first things that our family did was the Southside Soda Shop. That was 1985. And I don't know that anybody's going to tear it down, but that might have been the solution. But we saw an opportunity there, and it's turned out well, as you know. The three that I want to talk about is the half block on Washington, which Adam just mentioned. When I came aware of that, Bob McCoy has been out for bids for demolition, because there was so much talk about needing parking. Parking was the issue. And there were a number of people, mostly vendors downtown, who were very sensitive to that. And that was what everybody kept talking about. It took 2.5 years of talking to the city, and they finally decided that they would not tear it down, that they would give us a contract for $1 a year for 15 years if we destroy the half block. I think you know the result of that now. The other one is the mill race. If there was ever a tear down, that was it. When we bought that, everybody said, what are you going to do with it after you get it torn down? I mean, that was, I think the original buildings were built in the 1850s. They were all wood. It was a wreck. And the third is the bubble, where Myron Jeremy put everything they had up for that project. Another one that was wanted to be leveled. But let me give you some figures about that. On the half block of Washington, employees and employers only. There's 60 people involved, 60 local people involved in those three structures. At the mill rate, when you consider just guild members and employees and employers, we have 240 people involved. And we hold about 200 people in classes every year. The bubble has about 20 employees, and they have 70 people a day who are in classes. Now, those are just three structures that were all scheduled to be torn down. I can understand it. Restoration is a very special addiction. I don't know what to call it.
That sounds about right.
And I think that that's one of the reasons that it's important for this group to have at least somebody in this group who has that experience and can say not just cost, not the historic nature of it is very much something that they and I are always worried about, but the facts are that I don't think there's any doubt that our community, young and old, is attracted to our historic district because of the restoration and the people who come and build that. There's something about old structures that have been put back in reasonable use that are much more attractive than the malls. And I think we have to understand that as a city, that we cannot tear down one more brick of our historic district and surroundings. But we've got to find people who are willing to come in, take the time, spend the money, put them back in usable shape. And as I said, I'm listening to all the conversation for years, I've always felt that a frustration that because restoration of old buildings is such a specialty, that it never gets the attention that it should. It doesn't get the facts that you need to make decisions on. We're dealing with something on the corner right now of the hospital. They tore down an absolutely usable structure. I could reach it. And now they're building a whole new one. I can't tell you how much difference there is. I could have restored that property to absolutely excellent shape just for the cost of tearing it down. So that's a reality that you have to deal with. Then you got to find some young guys, like myself and others, who are willing to step up and take these projects on. But if you're supportive of it, and they don't feel like they have to fight for it, I think you'll find that there's a community here that really appreciates what's been done, the results of it, and are willing to continue. So, thanks.
I want to say one thing, Dave. I want to say a couple things. Number one, you were instrumental in saving that half block because you came up with a plan and you came up with the money that you were going to use to make that right. And that building was in fairly good shape structurally when you took it over. There were a lot of things inside that weren't too good. But you basically saved that. There are a number of reasons to tear it down, and I probably was one who said we ought to tear it down. You remember that, but you don't remember everything. But there were some other problems with that, groundwater contamination and things like that. We had to work all that stuff out. And it was a difficult thing to do at that time. Were you our lawyer then, Larry, in 2000 or 2001?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's slugged
so,
since then.
So, yeah, well, yeah. But, so you, you basically saved that yourself. You and the people that your wife and whoever else was with you. This, this building across the street that you call the bubble, you've restored that building, but what was the building to start with? Do you remember years ago?
Sure. Well, not as well.
Pardon?
As you do, but it was a gas station.
Yeah, it was a gas station.
Right, and then it was Signum Printing. That's what was the last.
Okay, so I wouldn't say that's of special historic value to the community necessarily. I mean, if it is, you know, every building in Goshen is historical, has historical work.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's, you know, if you get a good a building that is historical, to save it is good. And I've been on the positive end of several of those, and there are several that I think should have been torn down, and they were restored, and I still think they should have been torn down. But they're still there, and they're restored. So, you know, but I think if there is true historical significance, you'll find that I'm on the right side of that. I was instrumental in restoring this this annex building over here, which is the old school, high school,
sure.
Right across the street. And I was on the council when we restored the library. And I also ended up supporting the rebuilding of the Hawks building. And there were numerous problems there, and I'm not sure that was the right decision or not, but it's nice to hear people say it was. But I still get other people who say, boy, you wasted a lot of money there. So just to interject that I know a lot of things Adam said were probably directed at me. Also, I don't remember ever suggesting that the Crowder Law Office be torn down. I may have done that in jest just to get a little excitement going in the meeting. But a lot of these people haven't been on this commission as long as I have, but I'm sure they're interested in his historic buildings, and if they are truly historic and they can be restored at a reasonable cost, you'll find them reasonable people. But I just wanted to interject a little. I appreciate what you said, and you're definitely to be commended for that half plot, because if it hadn't been for you, that would have been gone.
Well, and what I'm really, I think, and I'm trying to say in all this is that it's not just historic buildings. How do you feel about Isler Garage? Where's the bulldozer, right?
You'd hit what?
Isler's Garage.
You'd have to refresh my memory. Where is that?
On Jefferson, across from D.T. Muffler there and behind Barrage.
Oh, yeah. My grandpa used to sell used cars out of that building.
What would you do with that?
Well, since my grandpa is very dear to me, I might try to restore it.
Ooh. Oh, shoot. Well, Isler's going to come up. Believe me, it's a mess. It's probably contaminated. There are probably a lot of issues there. But it would be a shame to lose it. It can be a relic, not historic necessarily, as this building is. But it's a relic of the past. It's part of the community. And we can't just put the parking lot in. It doesn't work. We can put the right thing in Isler's, and it will be a viable building again. The only one I would tear down today is the little guy right across the street. You saw it hurt somebody. D.T. Muffler. You know that one?
Yes, the muffler shop.
Former restaurant.
The restaurant? Yeah.
There's a little restaurant.
The restaurant?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, another bike shop.
Very short.
Okay, thank you, Dave.
Julia King, Goshen. I will let others speak to the historical value and the condition of the building, but I do want to just come up here and applaud you for tabling it and for allowing this conversation to happen, because I do think there's a lot of passion and expertise behind me here. And again, just thank you for listening. I know sometimes it feels hard. I've been in there understanding that when people want to put the brakes on and you feel like you've already been talking about it, but sometimes it takes a while for the community to hear things, and thank you for slowing it down so that people can get into the conversation.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Michelle Moat, and I live at 1401 North 1000 West in Cromwell, but I have a business here in Goshen, located at 222 South 3rd Street.
Can you speak up a little louder into the microphone a little
sure.
bit?
Sure, sorry.
Thank you.
I have a business at 222 South 3rd Street, which is directly across from the new development. And I've watched the progression over the last year. I am new to Goshen. I've only been open for a year. And so this is all newer information to me. And I've watched the progression. I watched the three houses being torn down. And I'm technically a picker, so I see a lot of architectural salvage, things that can be repurposed. And so it was kind of sad for me, but I understand progress. And one of the things that I have noticed is that this city is so rich in history and so rich in architectural development. And that was one of the things that brought me to Goshen. My husband has been part of the Goshen RV industry for 20 years, and I never even knew about this little section. And when I saw it, I fell in love. And some of the people that come into my store are also in love with the history and the feeling and the historical, the vein, the vibe. And today I went across the street and I talked to some of the construction people at the Hawks building, asking them, you know, please don't throw away the doors. What are you doing? And they told me that there was actually going to be a museum of some sort in that redeveloped part of the Hawks building, which made me very excited. And I recently found out about this 401 3rd Street, and I know that we can't save everything, but if there is any way at all to save that house, now that I've heard all of the history involving it, this is predating, from what I understand, the Hawks building, so that's a huge significance. And if there's any way that you could maybe, I humbly submit that maybe you can work with the developer, if you don't want it to be a residential area, make it a continuation of the museum that they're planning on putting in the Hawks building, since it is connected somehow, because it would be such a shame. When I was raised in southern Indiana, and there's a lot of little cute, quaint villages, little tourist sections, and they have all these old structures, and people go through them. I'm not saying to do that, but it's so much better to actually see something in front of you versus a plaque that said, at one time, here stood XYZ. Especially with this community being so rich in their history and their pride of how they've developed over the years and what they've had to offer. When I have clients and customers come from other cities and other counties, they are always in love with the facades on Main Street and how things have been preserved. And so if there's any chance at all to do a collaboration to where the building stays, even if it's not a residential structure, you know, I feel like that would be that's something that you would have that would also help integrate how things are being developed there now. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Anybody else care to bring up anything that hasn't been mentioned? Let's let Julia talk here. And then, yes, Ron.
Julia Gauchi Goshen. And I would just say amen to what you've heard. And one additional thing is that I think the original green is to keep what we have and to redevelop it and to repurpose it. I think if this building is able to be saved, it's able to be rehabbed, then I think it would be a shame to tear it down, to take it all to a landfill, and then to spend all that energy again to build something new. I think if we have something that can be saved, it's good use of resource to rehab and not just fill our landfills with more building material. So I would encourage you, along with the mayor, to delay the decision on this and to issue an RFP and see, are there some people out there who would like to rehab this, who would like to repurpose it? Thanks.
Yes, thank you. Yes, Ron.
The infill is an interesting concept, and I was asked that by somebody. What are you going to do with the property if it's saved again? You have there almost a half block that's empty. Historically, that was first a residential area, single-family residence, all the way down 3rd Street. The industry developed along the canal, and all along 3rd Street, that was residential housing. It attracted people because they were close to downtown, they were close to a school, they were close to where they worked. Now we have a situation where if you infill with residences in this block, as was in that 2012 plan, you will have people that will be close to downtown, which is now getting more and more accessible, pedestrians, bicycle. They're close to a mill race that has a park, a pavilion, and they're still across the street from a school. So I think this block, if you look at it, is a prime example of an option where people will be interested in living there. Close to a school, close to the downtown, bikeable, close to parks. That's what you're building. The Hawks building was built, put the arts in there because it was going to be pedestrian friendly and downtown. This new structure that's going in along 3rd Street is being built because it's pedestrian family to downtown. The 400 block of South 3rd Street was initially one of the first areas that developed residential because it was near the downtown. So what I would do with it, I would try to infill it, and that's your decision. But if you say, well, what's the option down the road? Infill it. And you've done that in the past, and I see no reason why not this could not be tried on this one. And it's a very attractive block for somebody to build a house and move into it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else care to share something that's not new?
Jeremy Stutzman, Mayor of City of Goshen. I apologize. I was late to the meeting here, so I missed part of the first part. So if I repeat anything, I apologize. But I think it sounds like Mark did read the little statement I left. I just wanted to explain that a little bit. I'm not here to advocate to save this property, and I'm not here to tell you to tear it down. I think either way we go, we will be able to create a good development either way with that. And for me, a property, just because it's old, isn't historic. I haven't seen the report that they put together yet. I heard a little bit of it, but caught the tail end. So I guess the thing I want to encourage the board is don't let the temporary parking lot be the thing that pushes you to make this decision. That's why I was suggesting slowing this down. We got space for the temporary parking lot. We can go just south of that. If the tearing down of this is because of a development that's been talked about or something else that you want to create a priest property, that's one thing. Just don't let it be the temporary parking lot that pushes for this tear down. I have not been inside this house yet. I've seen pictures and seen the outside. And just to be honest with everybody, this house isn't one of those that triggers anything for me. But that doesn't mean I think we need to decide what it triggers for the community, not just with each individual person. So if we feel that this is a valuable house for our community, I think it should be saved. I just want to make sure that we're not moving forward with this right now because of a temporary parking lot. So thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Okay, is there anybody that wishes to speak about why this house should be demolished? Okay, well, we'll have a discussion then amongst our members and see what how people feel about this, and we'll see if more public comment is needed at that time. So, you've heard all these people talk about the merits of this house, the historical merits. I have an opinion on it, but I'll share it later.
I've had, Tom, just so you know, I had three residents on 3rd Street that have actually sought me out that said, hey, tear that thing down. It's an eyesore. And I'd like to hear from the building inspectors from your and Vince's trip, but then also the building inspector. My big concern, I think, right now is getting the tenants out of there because it sounds to me like this is unsafe for somebody to live in. And that's not something I'd like to have my name on if we own it as a commission.
Okay, so are the building inspectors prepared to speak on this?
Myron, we had two inspectors go through this. This is Myron Grice, who's assistant building commissioner. I did pass out for each table a set of some interior photos, and maybe if you want to flip through those photos, Myron, or just describe what violations that you saw.
Myron Grice, building inspector. We went through the house. There's people living there, so we tried to do it on kind of a fast pace. We took quite a few pictures. There's a pamphlet there. You guys can glance through it. The foundation's pretty much the worst part of it. There's cracks throughout it, major cracks. One of them's, you can put your hand through part of it. The brick is a real soft clay. There's corners of it that's all falling apart in two corners, real bad. Around the windows, the clay brick is falling apart there. There's cracks throughout the walls and the ceilings inside the house, so it's definitely settling. There's other holes, big holes in the brick itself. One area you can see outside from the basement clear to the outside. There's a lot of moisture coming in one corner here. It's leaking in the corner. You can feel it's still wet now, so that's definitely coming from the outside. There was about six or seven floor joists that were just termite damaged. As soon as you touched it, it just crumbled. So there's definitely termite damage in the basement. Some of it's really bad. There's a lot of electrical issues there. There's a lot of things that's been cobbled in the past before the city accumulated it. So there's, I mean, we were looking at it from an unbiased point just to see what was wrong and how bad it was, but it definitely, in our opinion, was not in good shape. It'll give me a lot of money to take to get it back, you know, fixed up in good shape. And that's the thing. I don't know if the city wants to go that far with it or whoever wants to. There are some pictures of you guys have some there?
Yes.
So are we going to? Thank you. Are we going to have to invest a lot to get? Is it safe for people living right now?
It's borderline.
We do have one tenant's moved out, and the other, I believe, is in the process of moving out. I don't know if they're out yet or not. But that's how this whole discussion got started. Is our property manager said it's time to either invest heavily in this property or demolition, and that's why we went through it and started doing the inspections and put it out for the bid to demolish. So we don't have any cost estimates now. I mean, that wasn't our assignment. It's something we could do if we need to.
Well, we need to take that's part of the consideration. My Vince and I walked through that with the building inspectors and Becky, I think. I don't remember who else was there. But the repair work that would be required to bring that up to just minimal standards I'm not even sure it could be because the foundation is bad in areas. I didn't notice the footers, but the joists. I didn't notice that termite damage. But the property was in bad shape physically, and it had been painted over or plastered over. The woodwork, there was some woodwork there, but it had been covered with paint, that's not unusual. But the plumbing, it was just primitive, and, you know, I'd say minimum, not to do a nice job, I would say, you know, you're probably talking about $400,000 or so to bring it up so somebody could live in it reasonably, maybe up to $200,000. That'd be my opinion. I don't know if you guys have thoughts on that or not. But
I didn't look at the numbers, but I do a lot of construction work, and it definitely takes some money to fix it up.
Yeah, well, I don't do a lot either, but I have done some repair work, and it's just, I mean, it's just so bad that I just, I don't, I mean, it's just, it's in horrible shape.
One of the things that, we're not an expert on bricks, but it looks like the brick foundation is the same type of brick, they call it Chicago brick, that the Hawks building is built out of. And if you remember, we had to do major reconstruction of some of the Hawks building because bricks absorb moisture, and over time, they just dissolve. So we saw brick walls in the basement that are just turning into sand.
Oh, you touch them, they just crumble. It's powder. There's pictures of it there. You can see it. It's quite a bit of that.
So that definitely is a factor that we need to take into consideration. So are there any other comments about the building in general, about the historic value of it?
Whether or not we proceed with what the motion is, some other factors because of the tour. I understand and appreciate those who have said, what's the hurry? My response to that is, where have you been? This has been on the agenda for 10 years. But given that, I also understand the passions that are involved in that. I don't see anything hurt by honoring the mayor's request to delay. That being said, I think it's important during the course of the delay. And Tom, you alluded to this with Mr. Pottinger and all the terrific things that he's done. Mr. Pottinger stepped up to the plate with a plan and stepped up to the plate with funding. And to save those buildings, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take people and a group to step up with a plan and to step up with funding. We just can't rage at the machine and say, save this building, and then walk away. I would be in favor, and I'll make that motion when the time is appropriate, I would be in favor of tabling this. But as Adam, Commissioner Sharp also, or Councilman Sharp also alluded, just because we say not yet doesn't mean we have to say completely no. So we can, I think, we can give folks time to see where they want to go and how they would, what suggestions they could make in order for us to be able to get that done. And I would also implore, and I don't mean this, the inspector guys, who you guys work your tails off, please don't take this as anything that is aimed at you. I know there's a difference between state code and what I'd like to live in, and I can tell you right now that I would not want to live in, I would not anyone in my family, anyone that I remotely think anything of, to live in those houses. And if we keep this property to let folks have time to look at the historical significance of it, I would implore us as the landlords not to allow it to be occupied.
I agree. I think that if we can't really put it out there for anybody to look at, we can't just have people going in while we have residents in there. One of the tenants has already moved out. The other one, I think we've been fairly generous as far as no rent for a period of time. I think we should probably have the house vacated, and then once it's empty, interested parties, if there's somebody who wants to look at it and somebody wants to invest in it, then we'll have more of an opportunity to hear from them. They can't do anything with it now, with it occupied the way it is.
And the comparison was made to 313 Third. And I was fortunate enough, because of the business I'm in, because of my friendship with the owners, that I've been in that building, and I was in that building in its infancy stages for remodeling as well. There is no comparison at all to the condition that 313 was when Mr. Schrock and his folks started, and this building that we're talking about now. No comparison at all. This building is far more deteriorated than JC's building. That doesn't mean it can't be restored. I'm not an expert in that regard. Don't want to pretend to be. But there is no comparison to the way those two buildings look.
As a reminder, I believe based on the action of the commission at the last meeting, the tenants are to vacate the building by the end of the month.
Everything you've said, I agree with. I don't particularly see. I mean, the building has some. If it was in better shape, it might have some historical value in the architecture of the building. You know, we can't save every building in this city. We have to, and it's not our job to save every building. You know, the council and other people have that opportunity as well. But what I've always tried to do is see if the building actually has some significance, historical significance, which this building has some, but is it physically worth saving, structurally worth saving, without spending a whole lot of money? And the answer to that question, I think, is no, it's not. And then thirdly, you know, we have plans for that piece of property. We don't have specific plans, but the plans are either as a recreational area or some kind of, I mean, we've talked about housing. Refresh my memory, where did we see that housing development up in the region?
Burns Harbor?
Yeah, it was off of Burns Harbor. Anyhow, a nice little subdivision that had been built with houses from the 50s era. Nice little compact energy efficient houses. So we've talked about a lot of things. If we save this building, we're going to limit our options to that piece of property. And that piece of property could have the potential for a large dollar amount development, which would add more money into our TIF revenues, which would allow us to build more bike paths and things such as that, which we do a lot of. So I don't have any qualms about tearing that building down, and I don't. If you want to wait another month and let somebody with a large financial position make us an offer on it that would be somebody that could actually do the work and get it done, I might take a look at it. But the big thing for me is that it limits what we can do with that piece of property. And if that piece of property remains residential and in the shape it's in, then that's going to affect the rest of the property and the value of it and what we can develop that into for the city. So that's my opinion.
My thinking is there's just not a hurry to have to tear it down today. You know, or say we got to get rid of it today. Let's just wait, see if we can get some plans or anybody with money to do it. If not, it can always get torn down later. Once it's down, it's down. It's not coming back.
That's so, what I'm thinking.
Yeah. And so.
But in a different realm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if we would do that, Larry, we could delay it for another month. But then we would have to have somebody come up with some money, or we would have to put an RFP out.
Well, I think we'd have to put an RFP out anyway. I mean, I think that's the other part of the consideration. If you delay it, you're actually not delaying it for the next meeting, because you've got to have it time to get those proposals put together. So if it's delayed, it's at least 60 days. And I don't know if that's any worse, but you know, just so the expectation is they will be back to next month with it, maybe 2 months.
Okay, so Vince, you said you were going to make a motion.
Yes. Two things. One, I've been wrong enough before to know that it can happen again, and my bride reminds me of that. So even though I tend to agree with you about the state of the building, there are people out here who know far more than I do about it, that I'm willing to see, you know, what that takes. The second thing is that although I lean toward you, Mr. President, in some of your feelings, I also serve at the pleasure of the mayor, and the mayor has asked us to delay this. So I'm inclined to say I would move that we table this motion for 90 days, develop an RFP, and give someone the opportunity to step forward with a plan and with potential funding. And if not, then we have an opportunity to revisit the question.
Okay, is there a second to that motion? Motion to table for 90 days. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, Tracy, would you please call the roll?
Yes.
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 No.
Yes.
And the motion passes 4-1.
So, for clarification, you mentioned RFP. Is that part of what we just approved? Doing an RFP?
That was in my motion,
right.
Yes.
So, just for what? Just for the property?
Well, I don't know. How are you going to establish the value, the appraised value?
Well, we had to go ahead and get appraisals.
Well, you can't.
So the question I had for direction for us is, are we talking about just selling off that parcel, or is originally the plan has always been we were going to take at least that half a block, including this property, and issue an RFP for the entire parcel?
We're not in a position to get a decent price for it.
We can always put together an RFP that has options, and the option is develop the entire quarter block or develop just those two parcels or any combination.
Was there a motion 90 days to develop the RFP?
90 days. Delay. My motion is to delay this for 90 days to give time for the RFP.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but your RFP is going to include purchase and redevelopment of the property. It's all going to have to be.
We put it together that way.
Okay, so it's tabled for 90 days.
The motion that's in the packet is to approve execution and negotiation of an agreement with the demolition contractor. Bids won't stay good for that long, so my request would be that we.
Well, I wouldn't actually terminate it. What we can do at the time, depending on what we end up doing in this, if we still end up with demolition at the end of it, we can always go back to the current successful bidder and say, are you willing to hold your price? And if they say yes, we don't have to rebid it. If they say no, then we'd have to rebid it.
And my assumption, Larry, would be that we will take the next 30 days to get appraisals for the property to establish an average, establish any conditions for the restoration that would go along with this, bring it back to this group next month to review as it's issued.
Maybe next month.
Right.
It may be two months before they actually see that.
Right. When we get to the point of issuing the RFP, it's something that's posted on the city's website. Copies are available in the Community Development Department. We advertise in the newspaper. It is available to anyone. Whatever the price is that's established in the RFP, which would be the average of two appraisals, full price offers are issued within the first 30 days. If no full price offers, it's opened up for another 30 days. So this process may take longer than 90 days, is the reality.
We can revisit
it. Well, and you're going to have, if somebody actually would purchase this, they'd have to have some kind of a financial statement that would guarantee that they could put the amount of money into that property that we think needs to be put in there.
Right. So
otherwise, I don't know.
I agree. But just to make everyone in the room aware, we will be doing all of this. The information will be available. We'll have an update at next month's meeting regarding when it will be issued and available. And again, it will be on the city's website and available to anyone interested.
Okay, so the next item on the agenda is Resolution 37-2019, which is authorized execution of a contract amendment with Skyver Lawn Care for 2019 mowing. I thought we did this. Is this additional mowing?
This is an amendment.
Amendment? Okay.
Correct. Recently, the commission has added three properties to our property list for the mowing. 1213 and 1215 Hickory Street. These properties had previously hoped for to be redeveloped with La Casa. Their funding for that did fall through, and so the commission is evaluating different opportunities for those lots, and in the meantime, we need to make sure that they're maintained. So he provided an annual mowing cost for those. And then 102 Olive Street is the property at the northeast corner of East Lincoln and Olive that had burned. It will be demolished within the next few weeks. And in the meantime, we need someone to keep it cleaned up. And then once the demolition is done and grass is growing, there will be a per price or per mowing price established for the rest of the season. So we're requesting approval of a contract amendment.
Comments from the commission? Comments from the audience on this mowing contract? I'll entertain a motion to approve Resolution
37-2019. So moved.
Second.
Any other discussion? It's been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 37-2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed say no. That passes unanimously. Next item, Resolution 38-2019, which is approve a request from the Goshen Engineering to advertise for bids for Main Street streetscape.
Yes. We are requesting permission to advertise the Main Street streetscape project from Pike to Madison. We would like to advertise on June 22nd and 29th with bids due at the July 8th Board of Works meeting, and then we'll bring it to the redevelopment meeting on July 9th for consideration. The project consists of repaving Main Street, taking off the 4 inches of asphalt that is currently there. We did corings and saw that we have a mostly good base of concrete underneath 4 inches of asphalt. So the plan is to remove the asphalt, place a geofabric over the concrete to prevent any cracks, and then to repave with 4 inches of asphalt. It would also consist of reconfiguring Main Street from 4 lanes down to 2 lanes, changing the parking from parallel to angled, striping the bump outs at the intersections, and then we would put movable planters, delineators, to bring the intersection closer to the center. We would also remove the signals, the traffic signals at Clinton, Washington, and Jefferson, and place four-way stops. And we'd also replace the curb ramps at all the intersections and select sidewalk replacement along the corridor. It would increase the parking by 42 spots, which includes 6 new handicap spots. And I have a presentation I can show showing what we're planning.
I'll try to go quickly. We have it listed block by block.
While she's loading this, I'll tell you, there was last week we had a presentation with the downtown businesses and had a full house at the chamber. She went through this presentation and my impression was generally positive comments. I mean, there was a couple people who still questioned angle parking, but overall I thought the meeting was very supportive of the changes and had, you know, good feedback.
You have to send them my way because I haven't talked to anybody that likes
them. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just saying what I heard at the meeting last week.
Yeah, well, I wasn't there, evidently. I missed that meeting. How close are you to this, Leslie?
Yes. Yeah,
do we have some discussion or are you close to this?
Narrow, so we do angled parking on the east side,
with parallel parking on the west side. And the numbers with the color box behind them is the sidewalk rating that we did. We went through the whole corridor and noted deficiencies and rated them 1 to 5, 1 being the worst, and 5 being not as bad. So you can kind of go and add a snapshot with red being pretty bad, and then blue with green something to consider if, or something to drop if you don't have a company. And feel free to stop if you have any questions. Jefferson Washington. So we're not changing the existing curb line at the moment. We are striping it. And we have some different options for striping set up to all the very end. But on this block, we're able to gain control these blocks. We are trying to make sure we accommodate delivery trucks and hire trucks. So we do want to make the intersections wide, but still feel cozy, I guess, but also provide enough room for trucks and this block is in front of the courthouse, and we have the pool garden. So the part I think is we have the space blocked out for the bus to get them. And we're trying to make sure we incorporate all of those special needs that we have throughout the quarter. At Pike Street, again it narrows, so we have parallel parking on the west side and angled parking on the east side. And we actually use two spots on this one because of the expanding distance. And this just shows a snapshot of how wide the parking spots are going to be. A typical spot is 10 feet wide by 24, so it does give ample parking, so people concerned backing out, they would be visible to the traveling public where they actually got into the travel lanes. And the travel lanes are 14 feet wide. 12 is the preferred lane width, so we're getting 2 feet to help it not feel too closed in. So that was just really comfortable. And then this is just showing Washington Street, showing what the bump outs will look like. It will be painted. And we also want to make sure that we're accommodating pedestrians. So the goal is to bring the travel lanes in towards the center, and so pedestrians don't have as far to walk across the street. So we would actually place the stop signs in the board area so pedestrians could stand close to the stop bar, and they would only be looking at four lanes of traffic instead of the 6 to 8 that are there now. The cost estimate they have now is a total of $760,000. Redevelopment has committed $500,000, and we have additional funding coming from the state for the transfer, so we're able to make it work. But as you can see, we've had to scale down the project significantly because of the condition of the roadway. So we would like to do real bump outs and move the curb line, but it's not within the budget at this time. gutters will, just paint, you would be able to get an idea of if the consultant would want to make a permanent in the future and schedule that in as we go. So paint is pretty flexible. And even now, we're still working with downtown businesses and downtown business owners and the public to try and accommodate the striping for all the different needs that we have downtown. Our tentative schedule is bidding in June, award early July, and then construction would be early August, the end of October. And with our construction site the way it is this year, that typically would be a generous project with the paving and striping, but contractors are booked up, so we're going to try and see. We're hoping to talk to some contractors and see what we can do to make this as soon as we can to try and get some good bids for this project. Some questions that we're reaching out to the public and to business owners and to downtown is we want to make the crossing as safe as possible. We want to make sure we accommodate for any deliveries. We don't want truck deliveries to completely stop traffic. So we did hear from the businesses that a lot of deliveries come from the alleys throughout the city here. Additional bus stop locations that are currently going on. We have some bus stop notes on our survey. We want to make sure we accommodate for those that are there. We can move handicap spots around to where they would both most be needed. And if we eliminate particular access to some of the alleys, we can increase parking. So we're looking into that, and then stop signs, and we are looking into the four-way stop.
I presume you're talking about east and west alleys?
Yes. Yes,
not north and south.
Right, east and west alleys.
How are you going to do that? And eliminating some of those alleys will affect your access to parking lot.
Yeah, we don't want to eliminate any alleys that are used for parking lots. It would just be like the pedestrian alleys or the alleys that don't really get used that the businesses want to use for seating and things like that. So we're making sure that we don't eliminate all alleys just because it would be.
And why is there not going to be a left turn to the four-way stops?
The left turns would decrease the parking, and it would also make crossing even harder for pedestrians.
That's going to make it a little harder to get around downtown. I mean, I bank and go to John Hall's and all that other stuff, and I'm always making left-hand turns all over the place downtown. So we're going to be, yeah.
It was also eliminating truck traffic, so if we know that trucks will not be turning through there, we don't want trucks to go into oncoming traffic.
So you're just going to make it log jam up top. Is that it?
There's a lot of people that
turn. Because what, you still be able to turn at Lincoln at the stoplight?
There will not be a turn lane currently.
So you're going to have to go drive all the way through downtown one way or the other to get.
You can still turn, but people
would back up. Yeah. Yes, I will.
How's this? South Bend did something like this and then reverses it on some map later. It would get more.
How's
this going to be different than South Bend?
I'm not sure what
South Bend did. Well, they largely get what you're talking about, didn't
they? Yeah.
It's really narrowing their path to the downtown area, and they found that it had a negative impact on their downtown place. And I would expect this will do the same thing.
They're currently doing a lot of changes that are similar to what we're doing, but more. So they're adding bike lanes and increasing the number of lanes. And
no, actually they've increased the number of lanes. Because they had gotten it down very nice, and then they expanded the plane. They may well be doing that.
I guess there's no reason to put bike lanes out in the traffic because the bikes use the sidewalks, so they don't need any bike paths downtown.
So you mentioned that we're not really changing the curb line now. We're not building the bump out. So, you know, if we get into this and we find out we want to make changes, we have that flexibility to go back and make changes. All right.
Okay. So, shall we start with audience comment? Is there any comment from the audience about this plan? Okay, we'll move to the commission. I'll start it out, I guess. I don't mind spending the money on paving Main Street because it needs it. And if you want to have conduit for some of the electrical equipment that needs to go down there, that's fine too. But I'm not going to support anything that narrows Main Street down to two lane at this time. And also, I'm not going to support anything that removes three traffic lights from Main Street. So you can count me as a no vote on this. Anybody else care to make a comment?
You know, I know downtown supported this, and Main Street needs to be paved, and, you know, it looks really shabby, and I agree with that. But I just struggle with the amount of traffic on Main Street yet, and it's just kind of bottle jam. But I'm willing to go with it if they think it'll work, because it can be changed in a hurry. It can.
Well, I don't know about that. But
I mean, because, you know, in the 1940s it was single lane with angle parking, so I know it can get.
That's,
you know,
right.
You can go single to double, and you know.
Yeah, it can be done, as long as you don't put a lot of curbing and things like that in, and it can be done then, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I just think you're creating a huge problem for people that actually want to go downtown by restricting traffic like that, and the more left turns you can't make, the worse it is. And we've still got trucks going down Main Street, which I'm not sure why.
I am not a fan of the angled parking, and I can't imagine having no left turns at those things. I'm down there all the time, and I know Elkhart with their angled parking, I just hate it over there. Backing out in a truck and things like that, like I have, I'm not sure that it's going to make things easier for people. I find it very nerve-wracking, but the left turn thing, to me, we've already got that whole stretch on Third. You know, you can't turn left, can't turn left, can't you get down, can't turn left onto Main Street, and then now we're going to have Main Street where you can't turn left, you can't turn left. I just feel like that's going to be really inconvenient.
Well, you touched on a question that I wanted to ask Leslie, because it's the only thing worse than backing your truck out is being in the car next to your truck trying to back out.
Uh-huh.
Leslie, the experiences that Elkhart's gone through, and I would argue that Elkhart's results have been negative.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you from personal experience that I go to downtown Elkhart a lot less now since they went to angle parking. And I'm not preaching angle parking for or against. That's for bigger committees to decide. But what things will we do different to ensure that the negative experience that Elkhart's going through don't happen to us?
I think it's debatable whether it is a negative experience for Elkhart. People are concerned about the safety, but the accidents actually went down with the angled parking. And I always see people parking down there, so I think it's debatable on what it's negative. Some things that we can do to change. We can make sure that there's enough distance at the intersections that people don't get trapped. But it is very similar to what Elkhart did.
You know, I've been to Elkhart a number of times in the past couple of years, and I know they've changed things and changed them back. But one thing, there's not much traffic on Main Street in Elkhart, and there's no problem finding a parking place. That's why it's so easy to back out of the angle parking, because there's no traffic down there, and there's plenty of places to park. I mean, there's all kinds of places to park. I don't know where those people are parking, but I mean, there's no traffic down there to speak of. So that's one reason they don't have problems. If their parking is in their parking lot, that could be. Vince might know more about that, since he's an Elkhart guy.
No.
How'd you get on this council?
I've lived in Goshen for 28 years.
Oh, have
break.
You? Oh, okay.
So you've watched your movie?
So,
almost, yeah.
Okay. Brian, Vince?
I have real concerns. I'm similar to where you're at, Tom, in terms of I don't doubt that you got a cheerleading session, and that people. But what people have talked to me privately, they loathe the idea. Downtown people. So I don't know where that's at. I guess if there had been are there downtown people here? Please help me.
Can we talk?
I asked you to talk. You didn't get up.
I
come on up. Name and address for the record.
Amy Worsham, 905 South 8th Street, Goshen, Indiana. I am no civil engineer, but I'm downtown all the time. And I have to say, when I saw the proposal at the chamber meeting last week, I got really excited about the opportunity of having a more walkable downtown. And that was kind of how I understood the proposal, that we were really trying to make a downtown that was more activated for walking traffic.
Okay, but let me, because I heard this same thing with the stop signs, okay?
Yeah.
I'm the old guy in the battered Notre Dame hockey hat that walks downtown every single night. Mm-hmm. How are we not walkable?
Well,
I mean, I walk every single
night. So currently we're fairly walkable because there's still traffic lights. And I'm no civil engineer, so I'm not trying to be. But we have had traffic lights that slow down traffic for a period of time. We are walkable. I would say more walkable than downtown Elkhart. I've walked, you know, their art walk and things like that. We have places that visitors can stop and grab something to drink and grab something to eat and go into interesting shops along, like, you know, all of our downtown blocks. When the traffic study was happening, I did hear a lot of negative comments from other fellow business owners and people just downtown that the increments of time in between walking, you know, in between crossing at the crosswalks made it more difficult to jaywalk at the mid blocks and just to there was not as much feeling of security and safety.
I didn't think you wanted me to jaywalk.
Yeah. We like jaywalking. And so actually one of my pieces of input when the proposal happened was that I would like to see more interesting painted crosswalks, more bright colors used. You know, right now it's just the white where, you know, there it's pretty low visibility. You blend in with the streets. It's a two-lane. And when we go down to stop signs, I kind of feel like we need to kind of narrow that street and kind of make, you know, put the stop signs, make them more visible, and maybe do what we can to work with city to create ordinances that can help ensure pedestrians first and the safety of pedestrians.
Well, so that's already a state law.
Some kind of marketed or real movement that shows that pedestrians are more important.
I haven't been hit yet.
But the other thing about downtown Elkhart is that Elkhart they still have streetlights, and Goshen, as I understand it, wants to move away from the streetlights. So I think that maybe answers some of the differences between what Elkhart's doing and what Goshen is doing. So I just wanted to say on the record that I really liked the idea, and I really supported the idea of angle parking. It sounds like it seems like a really good plan. So
thank
you.
Anybody else?
And you should run for office sometimes, because you still never answered my question. How is it not walkable?
Mr.
portion, 9 to 5, 5 to 8. I was also at the meeting with the downtown business centers, and it was a unanimous voice of approval for angled parking and reducing the width of the streets. I also have some expertise in this area, and I don't know what information you have on Elkhart or South Bend narrowing their streets. They were one-way streets. I lived there, so it's terrible. And the improvements in two ways and narrowing the streets have been a dramatic improvement in that town. So I'll just get that straight. And there's significant evidence, academic and professional, that this kind of an urban intervention will improve our downtown.
How will it improve it? What do you mean improve it?
Improve it by increasing our on-street parking for our business owners. We can tear down some more buildings. I'm sure you'd like to do that. Or we can add...
Yeah, I would, as a matter of fact. You know any place I can find one?
Or... When are you going to be cutting down some of the buildings?
Whenever the mayor decides I'm not supposed to be up here.
You can add 46 parking spots with this plan.
What about the people that drive the roads? People that shop down here? What about those people?
Well, that's me.
You think those... Huh? That's where do you live?
I live on 905.
Well, you should be walking.
Well, I do. Also ride my motorcycle and a car. So I would encourage you, if you don't have an expertise, to listen to some people that do and to set aside your own...
I find people that say they're experts aren't always
you
experts.
You have any idea.
And I find observation...
No. Do you have any idea how... flipping insulting that is. If you want to get my vote, you got to be a whole lot more than just say, hey, I know better than you.
Well, I also...
Do you have any idea how insulting that is?
I apologize for the insult. However, it is very difficult for someone who is a downtown business center, who's been here recently, coming in and being... addressed very flippantly by the president of this commission. And I also realize, I want to admit that speaking in a group like this, I'm out of line, so I want to apologize formally for that. I really am.
Who was I flippant to? Who was I flippant to?
I'll let you all.
You started it. I was very cordial to Dave Pottinger. Well, I would say Dave and I are friends. We have some disagreements.
Well, I think this is a good example of maybe the disconnect between from the downtown and what's going on here. And I am here to just say that from what the group of people that were downtown, we had no expectation that there would be any fight on this. This is a well-researched design that we feel is a good idea, and we feel that the city has done a great job of researching, developing, and studying. And it's kind of crazy. Part of the reason I'm really out of line is I'm just so surprised.
You know, the city has funds. They can fund this on their own. They don't need our funds for this.
Well, I would hate to put them in that kind of position just because I'm so adamant.
At this meeting, what did everybody think about the no left turns? Don't they think it's going to be like a log jam once you get a lot?
I'd have to turn that over to the engineer. I don't have a. Our understanding of it was that it was going to be as though it were a two-lane street with 46 additional parking spaces, which is something I think we do need to bring up.
But the city, everybody downtown for the last 100 years has always wanted more parking spaces. And I don't, and it always has been, always will. They tear down buildings and put more parking spaces in.
The easiest way to get more parking spaces is for people who work in those buildings to stop parking on the street.
As I said, there's a big old picture. I've seen 1940s, 30s, Goshen, single lane, angle parking, Christmas time, seen it. So it's been done before, and it got changed back over to the double lane with parallel parking. I know there's not as much traffic, but if you drive around this whole town, the traffic's crazy, and everybody's always trying to find the quickest way on an alternative route to get to somewhere else. And it's always log jam.
I can see where downtown businesses would need more parking. I park down there and frequently, and it is inconvenient. My son works at one of the businesses down there, and it can be inconvenient. I'm not a fan of parallel that angle parking, but I could live with that. The left turn thing, that really is a problem for me.
Could we just clarify what we're talking about, the left hand? Can you explain what you can and cannot do?
Yeah, so I think we're clear that there right now we're not proposing a left turn lane. The intersection is still going to be the same size, so theoretically, if somebody is turning left, you would still be able to get around until that backed up too far. If we were to prohibit truck turning movements, we can add in that left turn lane. We don't have an issue with that. So that's something we can look at and consider. We would just want that at Lincoln and keep what we were going for on the other side streets.
You can turn left. There's just no dedicated left turn lane.
Correct. Yeah.
It's not going to be prohibited.
Because it said it says in here no left turn.
No left turn lane.
Yeah, that's what it said in here.
That's what I meant, is lane.
Lane.
So no left turn lane.
There will be a designated lane.
That's why I asked a designated four-way stop why you couldn't turn left.
Do you know where it said that?
On the very first. That's right.
I'll need to correct that.
Yeah, it says no left.
No left turn lanes at the intersection.
No. Yeah. So we can still turn left.
You can still turn left.
All right.
Sorry about that confusion.
Okay. Get two more votes.
So if we do need a lane, a designated lane, we would have to prohibit truck turning movements or modify the truck route so that they wouldn't be going into oncoming traffic. So that's something we can modify. But, yeah, you could still turn left.
Okay.
Yes, Julia.
Yes, Julia King, Goshen City Council, and I would like to express my concern about hearing commission members raise their voices in that way. I understand how it feels. Anybody in this part has sometimes heard things that they don't want to hear directed at them, and I know at City Council we have rules and procedures that say that we don't yell at people who come at us, so I would encourage you guys to kind of reconsider that and, you know, understanding you may have felt a way that might have been legitimate. I just encourage you to sort of rethink how we interact with the public. Thank you.
Yes, Julia. Number two.
Julia, number two, yes, in Goshen. You know, I didn't come during the public because I thought this was a done deal. And I'm surprised that there's this much discussion because in my district, many people in my district really support this. We've been looking forward to it. The downtown business owners have been looking forward to the redesign of Main Street because they want more parking. They want traffic to move slowly so that they don't feel intimidated, so that people stop and shop and park. They want walking people so that people walk downtown and stop at their stores. This is good for downtowns. I think when 3rd Street became 15 and the new 33 is 33, that took a lot of traffic out of the downtown, and business owners really like that because now people who come downtown have business downtown. If you're not going to stop in the stores, you'll do the bypass. You know, you'll do the new 33, and that's a great way to get around downtown. You don't have to stop. It gets you right out on 33 going to Elkhart. But the purpose of downtown, I think, is to make it pedestrian-friendly and friendly for the businesses so that they grow their business downtown.
Don't you think that now that most of the traffic is on 3rd Street, and I agree, I don't take Main Street anymore just because I go to the bank there, then I'm on 3rd Street or Main Street. But that certainly in itself should make people feel more comfortable downtown because there's way less traffic down there.
Yeah, yes, it does make people feel more comfortable because there's less traffic. And another way of making people feel more comfortable would be two lanes. And the businesses want parallel parking because they want people to park close to their businesses. And I think it's worth a try. That's what they want. And we can go back to it. We can make some adjustments if it doesn't work the way we anticipate that it will work.
The quietest voice I have. Questions are not opposition. And what we've tried to do here is ask some questions that I thought were legitimate. I'm not a fan of angle parking, and I admit that. And I will stay away many times from places where there's angle parking. But that would not make me vote against this, if that's what the majority of folks want. The concerns I had, and engineering can address some of them a little better. I mean, I hear about the more walkable. As probably the most experienced walker in this room, I don't have a problem with that. All I'm trying to get is how is it more walkable? Because I seriously don't have any issues with walking downtown. And as I said, I do it every night. The other part about it is I do experience the bottleneck coming through the neighborhood you represent.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to come north on 15 at any time between 2:30 and 4:30 in the afternoon, you're going to sit through some lights, or you're going to sit through some traffic.
Mm-hmm.
If we narrow downtown to just two lanes, is that going to create more bottleneck? And again, that's not a criticism. It's not a reason that I'd vote against the plan. I'm just asking engineering, can you help me with that question? And then the other thing, and I'm not doubting anyone talking about what the meeting and how people were supportive of it, but Commissioner Stump and I both have had people, downtown people, who have come to us in vehement opposition. So either they weren't at the meeting, or that they felt overwhelmed and couldn't express how they really felt at the meeting. I don't know what the answer to that is. So again, I'm not expressing opposition, I'm just asking questions.
Yeah, it sounded like that you were expressing opposition to certain parts of it, and it's okay if you weren't. And the reason I'm here is because I've had a lot of people come to me and say they really support this. Mm-hmm. This is what they want. And so I wanted to talk on behalf of all of them as well. I was going to say something else about the walking. But
while you're thinking of that, yeah. I've had a number of people express the exact opposite,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily
yeah.
from downtown. Mm-hmm. The people that come to downtown and come through downtown and try to work their way through this maze of traffic at certain times, they like more options and... I can tell you what. Well, I can't tell you what they told me because they're normally. Well, some of them are very candid and speak in very rough terms. So there are other people in this town besides the people in downtown.
Sure. Yes, and I know there's going to be a diversity of opinion, but I know I've heard a lot of positive comments, and the downtown business owners really want this. And I think and if we narrow it down to two lanes, but we have four-way stops, that in itself moves traffic quicker. You know, you stop and then you go. It does move traffic through the downtown, and I think that will be part of helping to move the traffic. If you really want to just get through downtown, you'll go on 33. You'll just go around.
Well, people want to work their way through downtown in a timely manner. You know, if you live out a mile from town, you're still in town. But the harder it is to negotiate traffic in town, the easier it is to go to Walmart in either direction and all these other malls that have all kinds of parking.
And
all kinds of ways to move through their streetscape.
And that might be, but I think this is worth a try because this may be really helpful for us.
We've restricted a lot of traffic in this town. We restrict more all the time. We build more buildings, have more people in downtown, and yet we're closing in the traffic situation and basically limiting them very much as to how they can move through the town.
And so
you're
thinking
around the town.
And so you're saying because we're going from the four lanes down to two lanes, that's limiting traffic.
It makes it harder for people to negotiate the town. And I like what Vince says, and it's been true since I can remember. If these merchants would have their people that work in their establishments park out on 5th Street, they used to park on 3rd, now they can't. There are plenty of parking lots off of Main Street where they can park, and
right.
they don't.
And that has been happening, and there's been a big input. I mean, I think they really are working on that, and they're not using those parking spots in front of their businesses. So.
Thank you. Anybody
Thank you.
Else?
I know. I just wanted to say that when they did the test for the four-way stops downtown, I was prepared to really, really dislike that. I thought that was a really bad idea. I found that I did make it through downtown much faster with those four-way stops. Now, it made being a pedestrian on First Friday, you took your life in your hands, so with those four lanes. So I don't recommend doing it without limiting the lanes to two. But I did move through downtown normal days much faster with the four-way stops. So for what it's worth, I mean, maybe that will help.
Any other comments from the audience? If not, any comments from the commission? I'll entertain a motion to approve Resolution
38-2019. So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 38-2019. Roll call vote, please.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
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 And the resolution fails 3-2. So next item on the agenda is Resolution 39-2019, approve execution of a change order for number 3, 4, and 5 for Kircher Road Phase 1.
These three change orders are kind of related, and they are for a no cost to the contract price, so I don't get to say that very often, so I want to emphasize that. Two of them are to change the intermediate completion date. This is Kircher Phase 1 from the railroad tracks to Deerdorf. Phase 1A was from the railroad tracks to Weymouth, and that was completed last year. They had some utility delays, so they were not able to do the final surface. So this is just kind of making the intermediate completion date for them to finish the surface and the path from the railroad tracks to Deerdorf or to Weymouth, ultimately to August 31st. So originally changed to April, so that they would pave it in the spring, but in conversations with the city and the state, we felt that the road condition was adequate for now, and we would like it to all be paved with the second phase of the project. So that's why it is being requested to be moved to the end of August when the phase from Weymouth to Deerdorf gets paved as well. So it'll all be done at the same time. And then the other change is for a mixed design for the asphalt, and this was an NDOT requirement that they change it with a no cost to the contract. So it's more kind of bookkeeping type of change orders. But any questions? Do you have to just answer them?
Questions from the audience? Questions from the commission? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve Resolution 39-2019.
So moved. Second.
Any questions? It's been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 39-2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed say no. That passes unanimously. Next item, Resolution 40-2019, approve an execution of an agreement for temporary use of real estate between the Redevelopment Commission and River Arts LLC in site develop.
The commission is contracted with HRP Construction for the parking lot in the 300 block of South 3rd Street. Insight Development will be constructing the River Art Apartment on the north block, the block north of that, north of Jefferson, but they do not anticipate breaking ground until spring. As such, Insight is willing to allow HRP and the City of Goshen to utilize the vacant half block for staging and construction parking during the parking lot construction. A temporary use of real estate agreement is attached, and we're requesting that the commission approve the execution of this agreement. The dates would be from the date that HRP mobilizes to the site, either for storage of materials, and then the contract for HRP extends through October 15th of this year. So it would be a short-term usage. No cost.
Questions? Questions from the audience? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve Resolution 40-2019.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions? It's been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 42-2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed say no. That passes unanimously. The next item is update of a purchase agreement for 627 South 3rd Street.
We approved the agreement for the sale of this property last month, and in between last month and today, there was a hailstorm, and that hailstorm did some damage to the house. The roof is now leaking, pretty major leak in the part of the house. Will have to be repaired, so we're going through the purchaser still wants to buy the house, but he's not comfortable signing the agreement until we resolve that. We're not sure if it's covered by insurance or not, but we're getting quotes on doing that repair.
Why wouldn't it be covered by insurance?
Well, we just haven't gone through that process yet.
Do we have insurance? We obviously do. We have insurance on it?
Yeah. As far as I know, it goes to the clerk treasurer's office, and we'll have to, they handle all the commission itself doesn't carry a separate policy. It's the city policy.
And you're expecting the damage to be somewhere between $5 and
$7,800,
I think.
Right.
Probably a new roof.
It's a new roof.
But
it's part of the house.
Yeah.
It's a membrane type roof is where the damage was. Flat section of the house.
Yeah.
So we'll work it out.
Okay. Redevelopment property for State Road 15 staging area.
This is a bit of an update for the commission. During the Waterford Mills Parkway construction, Fendon Brown was the contractor, and they utilized the east portion of 65736, which is the city's fourplex, two-stage for the project. Once that project was done, they cleaned up the site, planted grass, everything returned to normal. And we were notified last month that Fendon Brown, who's also doing the State Road 15 paving project, had opted to again utilize our lot to stage. And when we went out there, they had significant amounts of construction equipment and millings and traffic, and were essentially taking up the whole lot. There was no agreement in place. We talked with Andy Brown directly with Fendon Brown. They provided a letter, which you've been given today. A bit after the fact, of course, because by now all the damage is there and they're actually almost done, releasing us from any of the liability and agreeing to restore, meaning grade and seed, any disturbed areas. And so as this is nearly done, a bit of a moot point, but letting you guys know that it's done. They're aware that they should not be utilizing our land anymore and it should be returned to normal.
Is somebody going to inspect that?
Yes.
Okay. Any questions about that? And then we have proposals for requests for College Avenue widening and US 33 Fairfield Avenue project.
So these are two new projects through MACOG, so they're federally participating that we were awarded. College is from US 33 to the east to the railroad tracks, basically to widen the road to three lanes and add a multi-use path on the north side. And this will eventually connect to Lippert, to the east side of the tracks where Lippert was planning on doing their development. And this is a 2025 expected construction. So it would be similar to kind of the Kircher blueprint of the widening of the lanes with the bike lane. Eventually, we do want to connect College to Fiddler Pond. So the bike path would go north either along Horn Ditch or US 33 to connect to Fiddler Pond, and then it would continue north eventually to Monroe to the bike path along there and to Abshire Park. So this is a connection that we've been working on in the future. The US 33 Fairfield to Plymouth project, we've talked a lot about. This request has changed significantly NDOT has notified us that they're looking to widen 33 to 5 lanes from Kircher, and they're saying to Plymouth. We're trying to get them to go all the way up to Monroe with their project limits and narrow it down there. So it doesn't make sense for us to put in a center turn lane if they're just going to come through and widen it a few years later. So this project, we're still looking at doing the pedestrian crossing at Fairfield. It would be a protected mid-block crossing with the rapid flashers, pavement markings, striping, and we will be working with the consultant and the bike and ped groups on that design to make sure it's as safe as possible, but it'll also be usable. So this one does not require any right-of-way, and it's planned for construction in 2022. So we should be getting the proposals back this month, and we're shooting to have requests for consideration at the July meeting.
Questions? Okay, thank you, Leslie. Next item is approval of the claims, and before the meeting, there were several claims added to the list of claims, and you each should have one of those revised claims. So, are there any questions about the claims or comments? And this is the revised claims that we're looking at. So, if there are no questions, I'll entertain a motion to approve the claims as revised.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the register of claims as changed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. That passes unanimously. Mark, do you have anything to comment on the monthly redevelopment report?
No, I don't.
And we're at the point now of open forum where we can have general discussion on items that we haven't talked about on the agenda and anything else that is pertinent. Does anybody care to bring anything up?
I do have one more thing to add.
Okay.
Go ahead. Please, go ahead.
Okay. If I may ask, with respect, what is the protocol for when a property is acquired by the City of Goshen or by redevelopment, what is the maintenance protocol for potentially historic or otherwise significant buildings or structures in Goshen that fall into disrepair? Is there a typical best practice that you all follow?
It depends a lot on what kind of property you're talking about. Most of the time we're acquiring property with the idea that it's going to be somehow involved in a project. Sometimes that's done like 3 or 4 years in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes depending on what happens, it's even longer than that, but that's never the intent that we're going to hold it longer than that. So we rent the properties out often until such time as we need them for the project. We generally work through a rental management group to manage those rental houses during that period of time. And then as far as protocol is, and it depends on what the project is, often it's demolished as part of the project. Sometimes it's just needed during the project. 102 Kircher Road is an example of that, where we knew all along we weren't going to need the house itself, but we needed a big piece of that corner, and so we acquired the house with the idea that once the project was done, we'd sell it, and we're in the process of doing that right now.
And in the meantime, you upkeep it to the best of your ability, or?
Well, like I said, we use a rental management company, and they're the ones that are supposed to be doing that. I mean, obviously, we're paying for it, but they would be the ones to do that.
Okay.
It's a legitimate question. And frankly, it's a question that Commissioner Smith and I both, when we left our tour of the property, thought is worth revisiting. But it is a legitimate question.
I guess I should have asked during the old business section. I felt like I missed my opportunity. So thank you very much for letting me take some open forum time. Primarily I was wondering maybe what had happened in the case of the old business.
If we buy a property that we think we're going to be tearing down, we don't put as much money into it. And if it's not livable, we don't normally rent it out. I was somewhat surprised when I saw the condition of this property that we actually rented it out. But normally we buy property that's going to be torn down. So, you know, we make it safe, and that's basically it, unless somebody's living there, and then we should be following the city guidelines. That doesn't quite always happen, but most of the time it does.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes,
Brian? Yeah, I was just going to say on 102 Olive Street, 2 months ago we passed, and he had 45 days to get it tore down. It's now past 60 days, and there's a $50 a day penalty clause per past 45. Are we going to enforce that or just let it ride on by?
I don't know the status of that.
Jerry Reed was awarded the demolition contract for 102 Olive with 45 days to get it down, effective April 15th. First week of June, nothing had happened. We gave him till the final hour because he typically comes in at the very end of the contract term. It's been his practice multiple times. In this instance, he had not pulled his demolition permit, nor had he requested utility disconnects or retirements of any kind. There have been instances in the past where the city, we have done that ahead of time, and we note that in the bid specifications. We didn't do that this time. It would have been a standard demo where that responsibility was his. As soon as we noticed that it was an issue, we went ahead, we requested the NIPSCO retirements, and our water and sewer guys were actually out there today completing it on that end. As soon as NIPSCO is done, it's able to be demolished. We're waiting on them now, probably at least another week, is what we understand. Contacted Jerry Reed. He indicated that he just hadn't gotten to it, but he will be sure to get on it as soon as NIPSCO gives him the all clear. Not the first time this has been an issue, and I definitely think it's something that I'd like to have considered on future projects. He has indicated that he'll get it down right away at this point. Whether we proceed with him or move on to the second bidder, I don't know that it's going to change the timeline. So, we have had issues with squatters in the building. Building inspectors have again gone out and boarded up the building. It's hard to keep it secure. So we are working hard to keep it safe until it can come down.
So how many days passed due? Did you say 15?
Yeah, 15.
Yeah, 15, but you got to remember the contract does not require him to make the disconnect.
Yeah.
He's supposed to check to make sure it's done. But it doesn't specifically require him, which is what Becky was saying earlier, is the normal language in there.
Okay, so when can we enforce the penalty?
Well, what we have to do is sort of figure out, okay, how is he delayed as a result of them not being retired, and he should get credit for that period of time. I don't know enough about it to know what that period of time is, but my guess is that he didn't think about it until Becky called him the other day.
He did not. Yeah. If he had come in to pull his demolition permit at any time during the contract period, this would all have come to light much sooner. But he had not even made that attempt during the contract time.
So after NIPSCO disconnects, then he has how many days to finish it before he gets penalized?
It's sad. He'll be right out right after that.
I would assume that he will be there the next day.
Okay. So I don't think it's unreasonable to have that $50 fee in there, and whoever you want to be responsible to do the disconnects. But I think we ought to make it clear, because that I've been wondering, when is that going to be torn down?
Right.
Every time I go past it.
We've had internal discussions on making the process more clear on our end. I mean, typically, NIPSCO responds more quickly to us, so it's going to become a standard practice that we just do that. Historically, we've had it done before we even bid the projects out in the past. This one, because it was acquired as part of the property that was damaged by a fire, it was a little different. And so the bid specs were prepared very quickly so that we could move forward, and in the end, we didn't gain as much time as we had hoped.
Sorry, but the only reason I asked was, like, last Saturday night, there was two of the homeless I saw. Don't ask why I was working so late. But I saw, and they were heading down to that house. I mean, and so I'm sure in the stairwell where they can hide or get upstairs and such. So
it's a concern.
Yeah.
I know that county officers have been to the site. I know that city officers continuously patrol that area. We have boarded up the doors multiple times.
But, yeah, 10 o'clock Saturday, and I saw them head out 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon.
Okay, anything else that needs to be brought up? Yes, Mayor.
Jeremy Stetson, Mayor Goshen. Larry, procedural question. If I request a resolution that's been turned down in this meeting, can I request that they make a motion to reconsider?
They can make a motion to reconsider, and I suppose that you can request that they request.
Okay, well, I'd like to request one of the no votes on Resolution 38-2019 for Main Street make a motion to reconsider. Anybody can second that motion.
Well, I'll make that.
It has to be a no vote.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Tom.
I make a motion that we reconsider, because obviously we need to have an agreement on what we think needs to be done there. I mean, I said in, originally, I think, you know, some of that stuff needs to be done, but I'm not sure that Tulane is part of it. So I'll make the motion to reconsider.
Second.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded to reconsider Resolution 38-2019. So I presume you have a comment you want to make.
Yeah, that's all right. So I had...
Pardon?
What's that?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe we didn't.
Yeah, there was no vote
okay.
on the motion.
Okay, so I need a motion to reconsider Resolution 38-2019. Well, no, you got me all confused.
You
made the
motion.
We just need to vote.
We just vote on.
Okay, so we're not obviously.
You're just voting to have it reconsidered.
Yeah.
Yes means you talk about it,
okay.
But no means
okay.
Second. Need to vote on the motion.
Okay. So all those in favor of reconsidering resolution, let's have a roll call vote on this. Reconsidering Resolution 38-2019. Say aye, and I'd like a roll call vote.
Yes.
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 Okay. So, go ahead, Mayor.
Thank you all very much. I know it's a little out of the norm, and unfortunately that today has been a weird day for me with my schedule, and came late, and then I had to run to do some other things that needed to happen, too, so... staff texted me that it failed, and I just wanted to make sure everything was out there. This is a project that this group has agreed to fund, put into the project list. It's a project we have been working towards for at least a decade, and working hard on. We've got a significant amount of staff time, engineering, consultant stuff going on. We've had a significant amount of public meetings. We just met again on top of all the previous meetings with the downtown business owners, the downtown property owners, 3ID are in favor of this project. And originally, it called for a lot of bump outs and significant changes that you couldn't undo. Due to money and the fact that we wanted to put more money into some of the sidewalks that need to be fixed, we've cut it back to the repavement of the road, which is absolutely falling apart. The state has given us a street that is just a disaster. It's the only way we can fund the repavement of that road. And the other piece of that is we've pulled out the cement bump outs. So we're talking about repaving the existing road, getting it back up to where it needs to be, and striping with paint So if it fails, if angle parking is the worst thing in the world, downtown Goshen, we can undo that very cheaply. And I guess I'm just, at this point, with all the work that's gone into this and all the people that have been involved, I am shocked that it was turned down. Frustrated that it was turned down.
One thing, we did indicate several times among the commission members, and I don't know that anybody thought this two-lane road and angle parking were a good idea. Yet engineering kept saying, well, we've had these meetings. This is a synopsis of what went on, but we had issued warnings. I, in particular, and some other commissioners had mentioned that they didn't like that two-lane. And I've had, you know, I've heard what Mark said. There were a lot of people at that meeting thought it was a good idea. They like it. I've not talked to one person. I didn't talk to anybody downtown. Normally, somebody at John Hall's will say, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Well, I didn't get that. But the people out on the west side that I see a lot don't think it's a good idea either. So I guess I'm willing to change my vote. Because of the non-permanence of the bump outs, and because I don't think it's going to work. I don't know what the cost is going to be of painting versus making it permanent, but I assume that you could change it back for $50,000 or $100,000.
And I would make the commitment, too, that if we had to do that, I would not come back to the commission. We'd do that out of civil city funds if we have to change back.
I don't know that that's the issue.
Okay. There's also a big perception that angle parking is going to be much more dangerous. Yet we've had it on Washington Street for years, and if you check with the police department, there are very, very few accidents on that street. Anything new is going to be different, and this is the single cheapest, most effective way to add parking to a downtown that needs parking. And we also are in the middle of this huge renovation of our theater, and we're about to dump another potentially 500 to 600 people onto the downtown how many times a week during shows. So this is a fraction of what we'll need if that happens. So yeah, I would really encourage the board to reconsider. I want to be very, very clear. Vince, you made the comment that you serve at the pleasure of the mayor. I have never, ever asked a commissioner or I've never told a commissioner how I want them to vote. I will respect your vote, but I do want you to know my opinion on this and how important I think
it
is.
I understand that. And what I meant by that was that I generally try to go where, but if I have strong opposition, I'm going to voice that.
Absolutely.
I've never felt uncomfortable doing that. The rock in a hard place for me is not angle parking. I don't prefer angle parking, but I'm not against angle parking. But my concern is the funnel we're creating for what already is an almost disastrous traffic pattern coming south into town on State Road 15, and that we're going to funnel that into one lane as opposed to the current two. And I understand about the turning on 3rd Street, but the new construction that's going on in the River Race area is going to create narrower traffic on 3rd Street. So my concern is that back up there, and that question never got answered. I understand, and the reason why it's a rock and hard place question is I understand you can't do angle parking and still keep two lanes. I mean, I know that much. But it's that idea of going down just to two lanes instead of four that is my biggest concern.
Okay.
It'll slow everything down. That's why angle parking won't be so dangerous, because everything will be slowed down. But I'm not so sure that that's a good idea. And, 50 years ago, that theater was a going business back then. Where'd all the people park then?
Well, 50 years ago, you had much different cars. A lot more people in the community would walk or do that type of stuff too. It's just different now. But I don't have the answer to that, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm making an assumption.
And then Vince did say one thing too, and this has bothered me. And I hear this every time I get a haircut about businesses downtown, letting their employees park in front of their stores or on Main Street or on Lincoln Avenue or some premier parking lot that should be parking space that should be reserved for customers.
And that's 100% true comment, that there are several downtown business owners that do that. And if you ask them to move, you know, so they're not in front of their business, some of them actually move down in front of another business. That's their idea of getting away. And that's something we've struggled with over the years. But, I just think that there's been so much work into this that, we at least need to get this road repaved. It is literally falling apart. If the three of you, I'd be more than happy if we can get this passed. But before any lane markings happen, we'll come back to you and chat about this some more or something. Not at this meeting because of timing, but within a committee. I'll try to respect your decision. I do appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to speak. I apologize I wasn't able to stay. I wish I would have, so I didn't have to waste your time now. So, but thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. Okay, are you ready to vote on this reconsideration? Okay, well, we'll need a motion to pass Resolution 38, 2019.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay.
I was wondering if we could amend it before to take away the striping until... desperate need of repair.
We can. If you want to propose an amendment, we can.
If you take out the striping, then we would bid it without any striping, and then we would have to add that as a change order back in, which could increase the cost. I'd recommend we keep it in there, and we can modify the striping as we need to. It's just a quantity, so the contractor would just need the plan before they actually striped it. So that would...
I will commit that once we get the pricing, you leave it in there, that we will sit down, staff and I will sit down with whoever needs to be sat down with, explain the whole project to you at the same time. That's a move that I would say, because it doesn't need to be better for anything.
So in that conversation, you can help me understand how we're going to take this, narrow it to this, and still move traffic through Goshen.
Does that satisfy you, Brian?
Yeah, I think
okay. So. Okay, so it's been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 38-2019. We have a roll call vote on that. Tracy?
Yes.
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 Okay, and it passes unanimously. So, let's see. We're still at open forum now. Is there any other concerns that need to be brought forward? Okay, if not, our next regular meeting is July 9th, 3 o'clock in this room. Do we have an executive session?
Yes,
we do.
Yep.
Okay. So, we're ready for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Adjourned. Yes.